are now about to witness the strength of geek knowledge.
I geek out about TV shows. I geek out about music. Star Wars, of course. Fantasy stuff, Lord of the Rings. Star Wars, of course. God geek.
All right, you managed to find us again.
Uh-huh.
There are geekier things. There are stranger things. Nothing God geekier than this,
there
though.
There is not. We set the bar high for God geeks.
Man, do we. This is James Cleland. I'm at the James Cleland. And my co-host?
Bill Breimer. And my Twitter handle is at Bill Breimer. And my website is BillBreimer.com.
All right. You can find us on iTunes. You know that. So be sure to rate us on iTunes. 4-star, 5-star rating. We still have that contest where we can bring you on the show.
And jump on our website, godgeeks.com, and send us a message about the show. Tell us something you want us to talk about, or just tell us how geeky we are and how much geekier you are.
I don't know if there's anyone geekier than us, but okay.
Well, there's certainly not more geekier than you. I think you take the cake.
So this week we're going to continue our conversation about anger from last week, and maybe what's at the root of it. Where does it come from? What causes a lot of anger?
Yeah, I think we're going to get into some stuff that you don't realize is under there.
Yeah.
But it's there.
Oh yeah. And then we're going to talk Stranger Things, and we're going to spoil some stuff. Again, if you haven't watched the show yet, stop after Jedi Mind Tricks.
Yeah, we won't talk about it. We won't spoil it for you until the last half
and
of the show.
You got to watch this show. We're going to talk about as much as we can about it this week. We might talk even more the next week, but
yeah, there's enough out there on the internet.
A lot.
This show's starting to get really some hype. So, yeah.
All right. Well, now it's time for Jedi Mind Tricks.
Hit it.
I don't believe it.
That's why you fail. You must unlearn what you have learned.
It's time for Jedi Mind Tricks. Get out your lightsabers. We're going to talk theology. Quick recap, though. He would say
this is your favorite part of the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But really, we know you geeks are just here for This Week in Geek, which is later
in
the
show. Yeah, but you can't have your dessert till you eat your... Meat?
Theology?
Oh. Okay, yeah.
Okay, anyway.
So, anywho, last week we talked about anger, and specifically righteous anger. Does it exist? If it does exist, are we even capable of it? And I think the resounding answer was, it exists, but only God is capable of doing it without sinning. And we try to use it as an excuse for our petty anger. Man, are we quick to anger when God is really slow to anger and shows so much grace before he ever gets angry.
And we talked about how we're in a really angry culture now.
We have very angry
and
culture.
And so it's a constant sort of justification of, which is why we as Christians and in Christian culture, we've embraced this idea of righteous anger that we have the right to be angry,
or that
it's actually we've turned anger itself into a positive. We've made righteous anger,
and boy, that makes me angry.
You're right. Yeah.
I was getting angry earlier because there was a guy on TV who was so angry and he was calling it righteous anger. And I was like, no, it isn't. And started yelling. And I'm doing it too.
You realize that you were as angry as he was.
And a hypocrite.
Someone gave you a foothold to stand on.
Exactly.
So you could look down at him.
Yeah.
Which gets us to a... what we wanted to discuss
today
this
we're
week
talk
is
about.
What is the root of
it?
What is the, why are we, not maybe just in America, so angry, but we can get into that.
Yeah.
But why are we, like, and really all I can say is, why am I so angry? James, if you're angry, if you're an angry guy, are you quick to anger? You know, why are you that way? And so... What is it? What do you think the root problem is?
Well, my wife would tell me it's because I'm getting defensive most of the time. And if I'm getting defensive, there's something I'm trying to defend. And we were talking earlier, it's pride. It's definitely pride. where I don't want to admit that I could possibly be sinful. I don't want to admit that I'm not perfect. I don't want to admit that I'm not awesome, great, whatever. Because anytime I get angry, it's usually coming out of that. You know, someone cuts me off, I'm angry at them because how dare they that they would do something like that. I would never. And then, oh, wait.
Right. Tim Keller said one time, and I can't quote him exactly the way he said because I'm not that smart. I can't remember that well what he said. But this is the gist of what he was saying, that pride is like the moldy, grimy petri dish under all sin.
I like that.
You know, like the idea that your own self-righteousness, your works righteousness, all of that selfishness combines into this really powerful evil called pride.
It's the ooze in Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is
which fueled anger in Ghostbusters too. Oh man, we're working in some geeky stuff.
Like it's the dragon fire in Game of Thrones. It's it really is. It's underneath all the other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to watch out because Cersei might just light that stuff on fire.
Oh man.
But that is that whole pride thing. Now let's take this back to the original events. You know, the original thing happened.
I see where you're going with
and
this.
You see the woman says, you know, to the serpent says to the woman, you know, he didn't really say that. You know, he didn't really mean that you can't eat of the fruit. You know, and tempts her and says,
trying
you know,
to he hide just, something from you.
He doesn't. He's hiding. He is. Holding that over you, you know, that tempts her this way.
Uh-huh.
And she sins, and then the man sins. They're both there. They're both sinning together. And when God confronts them, you know, the woman says what? The serpent.
He made me do it.
The serpent, maybe. She points the finger at the serpent.
Yeah.
So it's not her fault,
no,
right?
I would never.
I wouldn't do that. She's already yeah. obviously already a big time sinner. Pointing the finger, she points the finger at the serpent, and then what is God? You know, God says to the man, you know, what is your excuse? Basically,
she made me do it.
You know what he does?
Yeah,
he doesn't blame the woman.
No, okay.
He blames God.
Oh, yeah. I remember you saying that the other day.
The woman that you gave me.
You gave me that one.
You gave me. It's your fault, God.
Horrible.
And now there is some pride.
Yeah.
That God is wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, we'll, ladies out there that listen, there's probably not many because y'all aren't as geeky as the guys are. Actually, you are, but... And actually, I think we do have quite a few female listeners. You guys are really good sinners because you were the first to do it, but we perfected it.
Yeah,
we perfected it because we didn't
take some pride in that.
We didn't blame Satan for our sin. We blamed God. We blamed the only being who has never and will never sin. We pointed the finger at him. And why did we do that? Pride.
Yeah.
We instantly, when we became unrighteous, we instantly became selfish, self-centered, looking into ourself for salvation, looking into ourself for righteousness, and looking out at everyone else and looking down at them, including God, which is obviously a very powerful petri dish underneath all of the sins, which it just drives so much.
The whole Old Testament, full of pride.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, man. Like Cain and Abel, pride.
It's the thing that drives idolatry. I mean, we know that we need salvation.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Yeah.
Adam and Eve instantly knew they needed salvation.
Yeah.
And what did God do? God sewed together clothes to cover them.
Yeah.
His first act of covering them with righteousness was covering their nakedness.
Mm-hmm.
And he would promise immediately that he would send in a Messiah. to make mankind righteous. That Genesis 3 promise, the proto evangelium, the first gospel.
Yeah.
When he says the seed from the woman, will the snake will strike his heel and he will crush his head, which is describing the cross. That's this first promise, this first gospel in Genesis. And the gospel promises continue throughout the Old Testament, and so does man's prideful rebellion.
Over
man's
and over
prideful,
and over again.
Self-centered, self-salvation, self-seeking behavior, which is so, is so perfectly reflected in the people of Israel. Not because the people of Israel were any worse than anybody else.
Nope.
But because you look at them and that's us. That's the human condition that God continues to save. God continues to come and rescue, and we continue to look to ourselves for it.
And then get angry when it doesn't work.
And then get angry when we don't understand why it doesn't work. Yeah, absolutely. And you go down the list of all the sins. It's all selfishness.
Yeah.
It's all self-centeredness, and what is at the core of that is absolutely pride. And if you look at just as taking it to like a current cultural reality, we as Americans believe we're the greatest country in the world.
We take pride in everything.
And there's so much pride in this party and pride in that party, and which very quickly, pride is instantly becomes arrogance, or it was arrogance before it
ever
became
pride.
And we
just gave it a different name.
You can see how this is the satanic nature of our fallen state, that we're constantly being whispered that we're better than we are.
Yeah. Is there anything we can take pride in or should take pride in?
Well, it's a good question. What do you think the answer is?
Christ. That's the only thing I can think of.
Well, right. And the thing about Christ is that we didn't do anything to deserve what he did.
No, not at all.
So it's sort of foolish to say pride.
Right,
because,
that's not the right word.
You know, are you proud would you be proud that...
I'm proud I got bailed out.
Yeah, you didn't even buy a lottery ticket, but somehow you won the lottery.
Yeah.
Are you
proud of myself.
Yeah, you did a great job? I don't know. I mean, you've been given an abundant, infinite treasure in who he is, and you've done absolutely nothing to receive it. And so you have, actually, I think the faith in Christ, by the working of the Spirit, causes the opposite posture.
Yeah.
Where you're not proud
you're
of
meek.
Anything, but you're thankful for everything.
Right.
That is the nature of God, to cause you to not be prideful, because he, in his nature, is not prideful, and which is crazy to think about, but he's not. That's the Philippians 2 reality of who Jesus is, that even though he is equal with God, the Son of God, Jesus, does not grasp on or hold on to that equality as if it were something to be grasped, but makes himself into nothing and took on our death, even if it was death on a cross, right? He made himself. Jesus's nature is to be humble and to be born as an infant in a manger,
he would not win an election nowadays.
No, he would not.
No,
he would not. He would be hung on the cross.
Yeah,
the same
exact
way
opposite.
That he was hung on the cross 2,000 years ago. Because
Amazing.
He is God and his nature is divine. And we look at that and we go,
weak.
I hate you.
Yeah.
I hate you because you're not like me.
Yeah.
And it's the reason he was hung on the cross. It's the thing, that pridefulness was what made the Pharisees so angry.
They were angry at him.
Yeah.
Everyone was angry.
Well, if you really go listen or you read the Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah.
And this is what, at Soul Thirst, I've had the opportunity to preach on the last several weeks. And when the Sermon on the Mount, is so masterfully given because, of course, it's Jesus who's preaching it.
Right.
But there's so much gospel and such big gospel promises at the front end of the sermon and at the back end of the sermon. But when we ignore the Beatitudes, when we ignore the promise of Matthew 5:17, where Jesus promises that he's come to fulfill the law, that he's come to fulfill all righteousness and give that law completed to us, to deliver to us righteousness. When we forget that promise and we just hear the law, we just hear the commands that are in the Sermon on the Mount, all we hear is condemnation.
Yeah.
And so when you read the Sermon on the Mount that way, you can really easy, if you just, which I don't suggest you do this, but if you just ignore the gospel, you act like you're hearing it in disbelief.
Yeah.
You hear what this man is saying.
Yeah.
That when you're angry with your brother, you're a murderer.
Yeah.
That when you look at a woman in lust, you're an adulterer. When don't make promises because you'll break them. Don't seek revenge because you don't have any right to have revenge. Love your enemies, all right? The things that he is saying, and you hear them with in condemnation because you don't believe or don't hear the gospel, it's no wonder they hung him on a cross.
Yeah, because
it's no wonder
they
hated him.
Yeah,
because they're going, everything that we've worked for, that we thought we earned, our righteousness under the law, you're saying doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And that we can't have. Get rid of this guy.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. When you hear that gospel promise in the Beatitudes, that those who are poor in spirit, which is everyone, you know, everyone's poor in spirit, that the kingdom is coming to you because you're poor in spirit, that if you want mercy, mercy is yours. If you want peace, peace is yours. That this king is coming to give you a kingdom, and that he has come not to do away with the law, but to actually complete it and fulfill it and hand it to you. He's here to give you a kingdom. And then he goes about describing, when you hear that beautiful gospel message and you believe it, And you hear that your identity is now in him.
Right.
Now when you hear his descriptions of murder and lust and all these things, what you can hear if you hear that gospel is
grace.
Well, there's a place and a people where there is no murder. I'm a king who has no murder in my heart. And I am a king who is always faithful. There is no lust in me for anything else. I'm faithful to you.
I fulfill all of this.
Yeah, I make promises that I keep. I have no need for revenge. I tell you, love your enemies, but it's because I loved you even when you were my enemy. So the idea that the Sermon on the Mount is intended to condemn you or to make you think that the law is impossible is to hear it without the reality of the guy who's saying it, to hear it without the reality of what he says at the beginning, because his intention is for you to believe in him and to receive the things that he's talking about. And that's what we have received. And we have absolutely no right to be prideful about that at all. See, we have no reason to be arrogant or self-righteous or look down. And I really believe it's the why he talks about, not judging our brothers and sisters in Christ harshly or hypocritically, because none of us have done anything to be righteous.
No,
you know,
he's
given it all for us. And so
which is so comforting.
It is. It's absolutely
so
beautiful. And
there goes the anger.
And so is the description. Honestly, this is where we as Lutherans a lot of times really mess up. We make the law out to be the opposite of the gospel, and it's just not the opposite of the gospel. The gospel is the fulfillment of the law in Christ.
Yeah.
So the law actually describes to us something very beautiful. It describes to us the character of our king, and it describes to us the nature of his kingdom, and it describes to us the inevitable reality that we have in him, a place where there is no murder, there is no evil, that justice has been done, and this reality is ours now in him. And so we have nothing to be proud about, but we have so much to be thankful for. Yeah. And one thing that I know that you'll be thankful for is we're about to kick right into This Week in Geek.
C-3PO has got to be the real nerd.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
Darth Vader was a cool character too, although he was the evil one.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
All right, don't take too much pride in the fact that you're listening to our show.
That was a terrible pun.
No? Okay, I tried. it's time for This Week in Geek. We're going to talk Stranger Things again, and here is your warning. If you have not watched every single
episode...
You've
not done your homework.
Yeah, just hit pause, come back to it. We're a little bit angry at you for not watching this show.
We're better than you because
lots
we
of
have
pride in the fact that we've now.
But listen, if you haven't seen it, I mean,
it's so good,
man. Netflix, Stranger Things. This is it.
Yep.
This is the discussion. This is where we're going to just say right up front. Spoiler alert. We're going to get into it, James. Hit it, brother. What is it that you loved about the show?
Oh man. Okay. So
the plot. Parts.
I could talk about this show forever.
Let's do it, you know?
It took all the fun aspects of the shows that I just... The movies I geeked out about in the 80s. I mean, I love Goonies. I love E.T. I love Close Encounters. I love all those kinds of movies. Twilight Zone, anything like that. And this movie adds to that canon in a lot of ways. It's not made in the 80s, but it's a product of the 80s, but with like modern sensibilities. It is amazing.
I felt like the music was phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to get the soundtrack because there's so much great. I mean, they got The Clash. They got they got everything. Like they got and even then the intro song to the with
it
the graininess.
Right. I loved the graininess. Okay, so what I... The one thing I think they missed an opportunity for, and maybe they just add another version of the show on Netflix, that graininess and the shakiness, like it's on film in the intro.
Right.
I wish the whole thing had that going on.
Kind of glad it doesn't have the shakiness. But
I like that. I love that film. Yeah. I miss film. So it kind of, even with that, it just reminds you of where its heart is, where it comes from. Okay. So let's talk spoilers for it. So L11, man.
Yeah.
They were... Where did she come from? We found out a little bit from... she was basically kidnapped from her mom. She's an acid trip, baby.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff going on. A lot of cliffhangers at the end, too, we're going to have to talk about.
So it's interesting. There's the question I have...
Yeah.
You know, the Hawkins sort of business, obviously, that's actually technically a
CIA kind of
CIA
thing.
Sort of, you know, secret government kind of a experiment place where they're taking children who have telepathic powers.
Yeah, and it seemed like they were using them at first to spy on the Russians or something.
Yeah, their first sort of attempts were to use, and it doesn't... Here's what's interesting. We will get into this. There are obviously they left it open for a season two or a different route. I even think a different time period that they could go to.
Yeah.
I don't know if they will go there, but 11 is the only character that I caught that actually had telepathic powers,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of honed in on her and were using her, like you're saying, to spy on the government. And then when she panicked and screamed, her telepathic powers opened up a portal to
another dimension,
Veil of Shadows,
the underside.
Yeah, the underside. But I mean, it's so beautifully went along with D&D, Dungeons and Dragons,
and
kids,
they set it up immediately. And you don't see where they're... You're just thinking, oh, this is
so... Here's
that
the
nerds.
Thing. Here's one other thing. So if you've seen the beginning, you know that they're playing a game of Dungeons and Dragons, and what's the name of the monster that they...
Gorgon or something Demigorgon.
So there's like
something
a
like that
two-headed dragon kind of thing.
Yeah,
and the kid that gets sucked in by the Demigorgon, the actual thing in the Veil of Shadows, loses a battle in the D&D game.
Yeah.
And then he loses a battle for real and gets drug into it.
Yep.
And I thought, and they kind of did this, they hinted at this, but they never chased this. I thought that the D&D game was actually causing the alternate reality to happen at the beginning.
Okay. Okay.
So did you
a little bit of a red herring.
Did you think that?
Just a little bit.
Did you think that at first, like, oh, they're,
this is like Jumanji kind of, or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, like that. Like that this imaginary world is coming into the real world. And I was like, okay, this could be cool. I mean, like, you know,
there
might be some Dungeons and Dragons stuff going on. They didn't go that direction.
They went a little more hard sci-fi with it.
But then they kind of went. One of the hints they drop at the end of the show to me is that the kids are all back in there playing again.
Yep.
And he throws down another
big monster,
bad monster. That's a different big bad monster. And almost immediately the kid goes into the bathroom and coughs up an egg.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, there is some sort of,
we're not done with this battle.
There's a dimension thing going on, but it's almost like the role playing game is affecting. I don't know if the role playing game is affecting the dimension,
or if it's just a device to kind of connect the two. Yeah.
And either way, it's cool.
I'm happy either way.
I mean, it's great, but I think, you know, so like you said, we're not done with this monster, because there was some sort of egg it looked like that had been hatched in there.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's not just eating those humans. He's causing them to become
them for something. Hosts
of, you know.
Yeah.
And this kid, Will Byers, which sounds way too much like Bill Brymer, has got the eggs in, at least an egg inside
of him. And it looked like he was able to somehow see the other dimension for a split second.
Right.
So, and I'm assuming that might be where L is, or maybe L travels between them.
Well,
L's
so
not
is
dead.
The deal
I don't
with
think
L?
L is dead.
Well, what he put, so
Hop. Yeah.
Hop put
Eggos.
Grab some food and he grabbed some Eggos and he put them in a box out in the woods.
Yeah.
Like he had been doing that all along. I mean, an indication was that he's been doing that all along.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you had any more insights that I missed.
I have a little bit of insight, but mainly because I read an interview with the creators of the show.
I can't wait to hear
it. And they're not giving away anything, but they said it could be that he feels guilty because he kind of had to sell out L to save Will.
He totally did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he betrayed her. But
he could know where she is, know she's out there somewhere trying to lure her, or is feeding her and supporting her, but L is not gone. She's not gone for good. Where she is, who knows?
Well, since
now we got a missing L instead of a missing
Will. Well, we know already in their show there is already an extra dimension that they've built into the storyline, where there's a something beyond our ability to see here, which is very biblical, you know. You know, the idea that of all other dimensions, that we've gotten into that on the show before. I can never get enough of multiple dimensions.
I knew you're gonna like that as soon as I saw that in the show.
When they went there with it, I was like, this is genius. I love the science teacher.
I love his character.
Yeah. I was like, that's genius.
That's me. I got my geeky kids to hang out with. How's it going, geeks?
Yeah, I can see them.
We
can
have those
see them
conversations
calling you on Friday night and going, how do we build it?
Simply.
<Uh-oh>. A sensory deprivation chamber.
We have this new Nerf gun. How do we modify it? But whatever. We'll get to that.
Something
sensory
like that,
deprivation pen.
Yeah, wait till they're seniors.
oh, man.
But you know, the story is brilliant. It's beautiful. I love the show. It was a great call by you.
I'm so happy. There's gonna be a season two. It sounds like. I hope it holds up to.
Did
to
they
how
say
it
is. Did they allude to that in the interview?
In the interview they talked.
They obviously set it up as if there was gonna be a.
They want to, and I have a feeling this is gonna be hugely, you know, successful. It is right now the number 16 show of all time on IMDb already.
Really?
Which is crazy.
I really didn't know it was that popular right now.
I don't know if it's that popular yet, but it's that highly rated by people and critics. It's a 93 on Rotten Tomatoes, which is really high for a TV show.
It's the best. It's the best. And I'll say this, preface this, but it's the best I've seen from Netflix.
Yes.
I mean, and I don't think there's anything else close on Netflix.
No. This was also my favorite movie of the summer, and it wasn't in theaters.
Well, yeah,
hands down.
Oh,
it saved my summer when it comes to that kind of popcorn movie I really wanted to experience this summer.
There was nothing like this this summer in the in the movies. Nothing even close. No. Now, we haven't seen Star Trek Beyond yet, but it won't
Which is getting some great reviews. I
can't
didn't expect that.
I can't wait to see it. Yeah. And here's the other thing. A little bonus comment from me. Suicide Squad, there's nothing less that I want to see.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the more I see of it, more it looks like it's trying so hard,
trying
and I'm just like,
oh
my gosh, if you have to try that hard.
That's what's so great about this show is it
doesn't try.
It could have come across as trying so
hard
to be cool. It didn't care, and that's why it's cool.
It
was who it was, just like those kids are.
Yeah.
And man.
And there's a perfect mixture of suspense, of horror, of
action,
of
comedy.
Adventure, and the comedy is the one that there is some gold in
there's
there.
There's
some laugh out loud stuff. And one of my favorite characters is the father of Mike, who's so clueless all the
time.
Clueless.
Like
he's completely asleep at the wheel.
Honey, we should trust the government.
Honey, this is our government.
When has the government ever done anything?
I mean, everything that he says in the whole show is wrong, and it's great. It's so good.
What did I do?
Matthew Modine. He's
he was so great.
Man, it's the first thing I've seen him in that I really thought he was great in since Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
Obviously, what's her name?
Winona Ryder.
Great.
She did great.
She did really good. The guy that plays the sheriff, who I've seen in several shows before, he was great.
He was amazing.
He was
good. I hope in the next season he is even more of a pivotal role, which it looks like they're setting that up. They hinted at his backstory, like he was a police officer maybe in a bigger city and knows more than he lets on.
Yeah.
And it seems like, and when they pull him into that car, he knows what's coming. He knows he can't fight the system unless maybe he's within. So now maybe he's gonna be
he's a good,
X-Filesy kind of
good
man.
Really good flawed character.
Yeah, he's great. So good.
Anyway, we love it, obviously.
Yeah, I could talk about it.
It's the geek show of the summer for sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch it again.
Obviously, I mean, other than Game of Thrones, it might be the geek show of 2016.
Yeah,
by the end of the year. So
yeah,
you know, Walking Dead, Fear of the Walking Dead. You got one more shot here in the fall, but who knows? But anyway, go see it, folks, or Netflix. Let us know if you need James's password.
He'll
give it
out. I'll share it.
Yeah. So we'll see you next week.